Stop the Devastation! Welcome to Ask an Atheist. 844 Skeptic. I am your host today, Becky Friedman, and with me in the studio are Bridget and Wesley. How are you guys today?
I'm good.
Doing great.
So what do I mean by stop that devastation?
Oh, that's horrible.
We gave a little teaser on our social media for Ask an Atheist of what was I up to on my Friday. I don't know if you guys caught wind of that.
Oh, I definitely heard.
Yeah.
So Betsy DeVos, none other than the appointed Secretary of Education, was in town. I wouldn't say in town as in Tacoma, because we're too blue-collar for her. She was up at a fundraising dinner in Bellevue, ostensibly welcomed as their keynote speaker to show how there can be women in the highest levels of government. Did the Washington Policy Center ever invite, you know, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Because that's pretty high up in government as far as being a woman, you know. No, didn't. But there was a secular angle to this. There was an atheistic and secular angle to my demonstration there. Not just being part of a teacher's union, not just being someone who thinks that more qualified people should be in charge of, you know, federal policy on education. And that's actually our Washington State Constitution is more robust on separation of church and state with regards to schools than a whole lot of other documents and states and certainly our federal government. Are you guys familiar with Article 9, Section 4?
I bet you are.
I can't quote it, but I am familiar with it.
Yeah, it's that all schools that are, you know, maintained by the public funds, so that's all of our state tax dollars, have to be forever free from sectarian control or influence, which would completely undermine Betsy DeVos's impetus to, or her vision for having vouchers to be able to, you know, give to parents to send their kids to private schools, parochial schools, schools that teach that, you know, people of other religions are horrible and going to hell, schools that teach that the earth is 6,000 years old, schools that teach there are only two genders and they have very defined roles and things like that. And I would say that that's pretty close to sectarian control or influence.
A little bit, just, you know.
Schools teaching fake news?
What? Yeah, see, we're trying to get around that in schools. We're trying to teach media literacy. We're trying to read for bias. It's actually kind of embedded in our curriculum and kind of an important thing. And, well, Betsy DeVos, she's not so much up on that.
No, I did see a lot of protests of her, like a lot of people protesting her being in town, which was really kind of fun to see.
Right, because you were in the Seattle side of things, right?
I was in Seattle, leaving Seattle when that happened, and just like the public transportation going to Bellevue was ridiculously packed with people and signs, and it was really heartening to see so many people, not just educators, but so many people invested in protesting this. It was, I wish I could have been there, but I had other things happening.
I did see some wonderful banners, though.
Yes.
One of the really interesting ones is that I saw was policy so pathetic that even private school parents are protesting. That was a good one. But we had one of the really neat things also was we had the Trump chicken that was there. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yes.
That's the chicken that has the gold lame sort of toupee hairstyle.
Thing.
Yeah, toupee and very angry. So we all got our pictures taken in front of the Trump chicken.
Nice. Oh, I'm jealous.
You know, Betsy DeVos also is well supported by folks who want to undermine unions. And so you get a lot of union support, wherever there's any kind of DeVos, gathering, you know, or appearance. And so one of the other blow ups on the other side from the Trump chicken was a big old cat strangling a union worker. So fat cat.
And nice.
I think my only time actually seeing the cat portrayed as the villain.
Yeah.
Well, I'm still wondering why she is here to raise money.
She is here for Washington Policy Center as their keynote speaker so that they can raise money. It's their annual fundraising dinner. And they're a sort of libertarian minded think tank. That's there up in Bellevue. It was interesting seeing, you know, waiting on the street corner as we're approaching the area, and she was at the Hyatt, and seeing, you know, folks that were there with our posters and our t-shirts and things like that, and then folks very coiffed and dressed up, and who's an attendee and who's a protester? It's very easy to note and very easy to see there. So, yeah, Betsy DeVos wasn't making it down to Tacoma or Fife or Federal Way or anything like that. Not much fundraising to be had there for, you know, things like that. And the thing that really gets me is when you say, well, we need innovation. We need, you know, something to push the envelope in terms of education. And there's me editorializing for what it's worth. We've got a ton of innovation going on in public schools. And the way that Washington State schools are designed allows for a lot of those different innovative things to happen. We have friend of the show, Carol, who works at a very innovative school. We have, you know, Bridget, you have been in public schools before that have, you know, very specified programs to meet the needs of children of all different abilities, and particularly with regards to deaf and hard of hearing children.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we had students that would come in to do just deaf ed classes. We would have them do some deaf ed, some mainstream. It was a bilingual, bicultural approach to educating our deaf students.
And those parents had a choice on whether to send their students to their children to your district, right?
Yeah, they did. We actually had 19 different districts feed into our school district for their deaf students. Because, I mean, if you only have one deaf student, you're not going to have an entire program, but you also don't want them to be completely isolated in mainstream classes with this adult following them around. And
that adult being the interpreter?
The interpreter, just following them around from class to class, because in deaf culture is passed down, but it's passed across. It's taught typically peer to peer rather than from parent to child. So if you have one child alone in a school without that, then they don't learn their deaf culture. They don't learn their deaf roots. And that's important to a lot of people to have that culture that they can identify with.
So we've got some of that school choice going on here already in Washington State.
Absolutely.
And we have a robust constitution that does not allow any of our tax money to support any kind of sectarian schools, any kind of religious schools. You know who doesn't have a choice in school, though? It's athletes down in Louisiana.
Mm. Oh, boy.
You guys want to go way down south now?
Sure.
Because this is a tough one. This is a Louisiana school district is under fire for First Amendment violations after issuing a statement that student athletes would be disciplined if they knelt during the national anthem. The statement, made by Bossier Parish School Superintendent Scott Smith, mandates that all players stand during the broadcasting of the national anthem at district sporting events as a sign of respect for the nation's military and veterans, or face disciplinary action. This has prompted six secular organizations to write a letter to the school district and state athletic association calling into question the constitutionality of the request to limit students' free speech and urging them to implement policies to protect students' rights to protest. The letter additionally calls out the district for an incident in which a student-led prayer was broadcast before September 29th game, which ended in the student thanking Jesus.
Right. Well, this sounds like a slam dunk. I mean,
wrong
should...
sport, Wesley.
Oh, sorry.
Is that what?
Okay, this should be a touchdown.
Touchdown. Okay.
All right. Yeah. This is pretty well as well trodden as it comes. I mean, there's. How is this? The only reason this is such a thing is because it's down in Louisiana.
I'm not even sure about it just because it's down in Louisiana. I mean, you made your home for many years in Bremerton, home of football coach Joe Kennedy.
Oh, throw forward.
Should we revisit some of his antics? I mean, in terms of coach-led prayer, the intersection of prayer and Christian prayer in particular, or Christian reverence and football, seems to be not something just relegated to the South.
Yeah, no. Okay, you're right. This shouldn't be like, you know, as American as apple pie. This should be like, this shouldn't, why is this such a tie-in? But yeah, I mean, they had like a student leading a Christian prayer over the PA system, which is basically not just a student-led prayer, which would in general be okay, but... oh, man.
When you have an audience that cannot leave...
Yeah.
That breaks that's, you know, First Amendment, right? Like,
I'm generally with you, and I've seen a lot of the rulings in terms of at graduation ceremonies, and actually this particular school district in earlier this year, this spring, actually had student-led prayers at a graduation ceremony. And that's generally considered not okay, because even though they're student-led, you do have that captive audience. You do have folks that have to be there. It would be like at a assembly, you know, right, not allowing people to, you know, leave that assembly or, you know, face disciplinary action. But at a football game, I'm not quite sure, because we do know that students' rights to protest is as equally protected as a student's right to pray, right, on their own. So if it is student-led and it's not initiated by Superintendent Smith, is that really the school district forcing the football game attendees to be captive to this prayer?
I would say because it's over the PA, yes.
Right. Because, I mean, there are people who have to be there. I mean, it could be refs, it could be parents, it could be medical professionals that have to be in attendance at that game that may not want to hear those sorts of things. They are essentially a captive audience.
Ah, you know, I'm thinking at the same time, too. We have, you know, the pep band or the marching band that's
right,
there. They
exactly.
might lose points towards their grade if they miss out on a certain number of football games.
Exactly. I mean, I was in the band myself. And if that had happened, that would have made me very uncomfortable. And so, yeah, I mean, where are my rights being protected there?
So there's something before even, you know, this year between the student-led prayers at the graduation ceremony, student-led prayers at the football game, and the, hey, student-athletes, you're not allowed to take a knee. We go all the way back to 2015. 2 years ago, the ACLU actually lodged complaints against this particular school district because there were prayer boxes in a high school, or planned prayer boxes. I am in a school. I've been a teacher for 12 years now. What the heck is a prayer box?
I can answer that because I had to deal with that in my school as well when I was teaching.
Okay, so again, not only in Louisiana.
This was in the school that I taught at and actually graduated from as well. And they wanted to, so it became a thing where they would, there was a club for Christians at the school, totally fine. I was the advisor for our Gay Straight Alliance. So they would put up these posters advertising their club that all had Bible quotes on them. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. You can say when and where, but you cannot put Bible quotes that are exclusionary to others on these posters. So those had to come down. So in sort of a retaliation, they decided to put prayer boxes up in the cafeteria, in common areas, in there were like classroom clusters in those common clusters. They were decorated. They had Bible quotes. They had the whole shebang.
So what's the purpose of a prayer box?
People who have concerns or want prayers would put their request in the box, and then the club would pray over them during club activity time.
Sounds like witchcraft.
Right? So again, I had to fight that one too. And it became this huge ongoing battle. And then my car was vandalized with Bible quotes in the school parking lot.
Wow.
So yeah, definitely not just in Louisiana.
And this is a Western Washington
thing.
This
is Western Washington. This is north of Seattle. Yeah, definitely happened.
So what's the difference in this case between a prayer box, in, you know, on school campus, and another thing that's occupying space in a school that has to do with another club? So if there's, you know, if there's the chess club also has a corner of, you know, the cafeteria, and they paint chess boards on a particular, you know, table or set of tables. What's the difference between a prayer box occupying space in the general school arena and the chess boards occupying space in that school arena?
Anybody can play chess if they want to. But not everybody is going to want to read Bible quotes as they're, you know, doing their group study time in the study areas, you know.
So chess doesn't really interfere with someone's creed.
Right.
But when you have Bible quotes that are particularly exclusionary, you're looking at interfering with, you know, the the right to exist for in, you know, in the case of the kids that you were advising of the, you know, GSA, Gay Straight Alliance, the right of a non-straight, non-Christian kid to even exist in that space.
Exactly.
Hmm.
That's okay. The big difference. And it's the same with taking a knee during the national anthem. Like, they have the right to do that. You can't like exclude or discipline a student just for wanting to say, hey, I'm just going to opt out on this. Like, that requiring them to do that, requiring them to face these disciplinary actions, or requiring them to see these Bible quotes in their school, that is affecting them as their core essence of being who they are. And that makes me not happy.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, you don't have to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. There's case law on that as well. I believe that was due to the Seventh-day Adventists, wasn't it?
Jehovah's Witnesses, starting way back in the 50s? The original cases started in the late 30s, I think 39. Oh. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it seems a little bit counterintuitive. You think that, oh, it's all the atheists that are, you know, raising a stink about having to participate in pledges and patriotic, displays and things like that. But no, it's actually other religious groups that are equally as protected from being coerced into doing that, too.
Right.
So I'm looking now at this, you know, a bunch of high school athletes that want to kneel during the national anthem. And there is a military base associated, you know, very close to this particular, to Bossier Parish. And I'm looking at the superintendent's reasoning of making these kids stand up during this national anthem broadcast. And I'm thinking, this is respect for the nation's military and veterans. And I'm thinking, you know what, when you protest something, are you protesting the military? Are you protesting veterans here? Is this against veterans?
All I know is the veterans that I'm friends with, they all are talking about they fought for our rights to protest.
Right.
So do you think that's a particularly Pacific Northwest thing? I wouldn't count on that necessarily, because you have people that are in the military that are stationed and restationed all around the country.
All over the world.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I would like to find some of these Bossier Parish, you know, military folks and say, what's your feeling on this?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that there was a city council or a county council meeting somewhere in Western Washington where the veterans went en masse to this council, and during the national anthem or the pledge, I think they took a knee instead, and they were the veterans doing that specifically in support of the athletes and other entertainers that are taking a stance on that, which I thought was pretty cool.
That is pretty neat. Yeah. I really wish these young athletes luck. I'm grateful for this coalition of groups that wrote this letter. I hope that, you know, actually in looking at some of the coverage, of course, it says American Atheists and a whole bunch of other groups. It's, you know, hearkening in on that atheists are suing a school district or saying, you know, something in contradiction to someone who says respect veterans. But the groups are the American Atheists, Freedom from Religion Foundation, Center for Inquiry, the American Humanist Association, Secular Student Alliance, and Secular Coalition for America. So yes, these are all non-religious organizations, some who are more strident in their fighting of these things, some who are just there to support non-theistic kids and individuals, and even theists who wish to be able to exercise their First Amendment rights. So we did hear about football, and we see this like mixing of dogma, of ritual, of religion in sports. But one thing that always kind of baffled me is when you have athletes who, after making their slam dunk or their touchdown or their home run, right? And they do their little, you know, thanks to God, you know, they wave at the sky or point at the sky or do their cross or something like that. And I think, you know, if I believed in a God, wouldn't God have a ton of other better things to do than to help a, one little, you know, a pigskin fly from one end a few hundred yards to a different end of things?
Heck no. God's a betting man.
To that end, in a recent interview given at Liberty University's convocation, NFL quarterback Christian Ponder revealed that he sometimes blamed God for his poor performances on the field. Ponder was selected as the 12th overall draft pick in 2011 for the Minnesota Vikings, but was released after the 2014 season for failing to live up to his team and fans' expectations. Speaking to his wife, who's a sports reporter, Sam Ponder, he said, well, let's hear it with our own ears from his own mouth.
With my faith going in the NFL, you know, I honestly, like, I would think, hey, if I pray, if I get in the Bible, then I'm going to play well on Sunday. You know, that was kind of like my faith. Like, I was using God for myself. Like, God, you know, is, that's how he works. And what I realized was my faith was so up and down with how I played, because when I played well, I was like, hey, God's awesome. If I didn't play well, it was almost like I blamed him for not playing well.
God is not a performance-enhancing drug.
I guess not. If your God addiction is there, or if you're linked into God for longer than 4 hours, do you need to help seek the help of a doctor in that case? So what's really striking me is that he really failed to expand on how this, you know, relationship of, you know, him and God should work, you know, because, you know, he's saying, well, that's not how this relationship is supposed to work. I'm not, he's sort of slamming himself of saying, oh man, I shouldn't have blamed God for when I missed all of those plays, right? But who should you have been blaming? What is that relationship with God supposed to be? And how does that even enter into your sports?
Maybe he should have, read the book a little bit less and practice a little bit more, because he's been a free agent, unsigned for quite a few years.
What,
now.
Since 2014 has he been out of a job?
That's what I remember. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he hasn't been playing for a while.
So he's a free agent in this league.
Free agent, aka unemployed.
It is kind of refreshing, though, for an athlete to actually admit that not only were you thanking God when you did something awesome on the field, but this guy for once actually took it to the logical, you know, end of saying, hey, if I messed up, it must also be with God. And that also must lie with God. If you're going to thank him for helping your ball fly from one end to the other, right, then you should also go the logical other inverse.
Absolutely. But that's not how the relationship works. I'm like, I don't know how you think that the relationship should work. Like, that's a really confusing thing to me. I mean, I was raised in that religion and yeah, it was supposed to be like glory to God and personal like responsibility for your negative actions. Like, that's how I was always raised.
So for anything excellent that you achieved or accomplished, it was actually God that had helped you with that,
right?
Or God who had done it for you.
Right.
So you couldn't actually take any of your own accomplishment and hard work and then pat yourself on the back for it.
Right. But if something were to go wrong, it would be that I didn't have enough faith.
It was your failing.
It was my failing, yep, on that. It wasn't God.
Well, that seems like a horrible place for your mind to be stuck in.
Tell me about it.
How'd you get out of it?
I still struggle with it. I've been out of the religion as long as I was in it. And I still struggle with that guilt of like, oh, I'm not being faithful enough because this isn't working. And then I'm like, wait, I don't have faith. Right.
So are you then able to pat yourself on the back for some of your accomplishments, things that you work hard for?
I still struggle.
Man, I don't
do.
Maybe you need to ponder on it a little bit.
Oh, Becky.
I don't want to make fun of someone's given name because it's something that you don't have control over, but it's a fascinating name for a religious Christian believing man to be named Christian Ponder. If you were to script a character in a Tim LaHaye book, you know, in one of the Left Behind novels as the most pious and thinking person, I think you'd have to name him Christian Ponder.
So long as Kirk Cameron played him.
So maybe, Mr. Ponder, football isn't actually your vocation or calling, and maybe there's something else that you can be called to and drawn to. This is Ask an Atheist. We'll be back after the break, but in the meantime, hey, Bridget, it's been nice having you back in the studio, and Wesley, it's awesome always having that conversations about sports. football, school, all sorts of stuff. Give us a voicemail at 844-SKEPTIC.
You are listening to KTAH LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 KTAH LP 101.9 FM.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. 844-SKEPTIC is our voicemail line, and you can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. I'm still your host, Becky, and Bridget's still in the studio with me, but we've welcomed in Meredith. How are you?
I am surviving,
Becky. Surviving?
I'm alive at this point.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Alive is excellent, and not by the grace of God or anything, right?
No, by my own sheer willpower.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sheer determination.
Yep.
And really killer hair.
Thank you.
Yes.
So one thing that I want to mention that's really exciting for us and for our community in the greater Tacoma community is that Shelley Siegel and her partner Rob will be in Portland next Friday and then Tacoma next Sunday, October 22nd.
I can't even contain the excitement, guys. This is just like, to have her back is just the best.
I know. Shelley is so wonderful. She always makes me feel so happy and special when I see her.
So Shelley's going to be at the Swiss for our regular Ask an Atheist crowd post show. That's going to be at 5:30 p.m. on October 22nd on Sunday. We might have some little guest performances here and there. Who knows? We've got a lot of people in the community that have worked with Shelley and collaborated, you know, either socially or musically or in songwriting. And Shelley's such a pinnacle of the atheist and humanist community, I think because she really blew it out of the water a few years ago with her concept album, An Atheist Album.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think for so long, you know, we've been relying on Steve Martin's, you know, banjo, Atheist Ain't Got No Songs. Uh-huh. So we've been relying on that. And then some people say Imagine is an atheist anthem merely mm-hmm. because it says Imagine No Religion, right? Yeah, but it's more like hypothesizing yeah. What if there was no religion? And not all atheists want to eradicate religion
right.
from the world. Some do. Some think that it would be better. Some won't, you know, go to say, hey, you shouldn't be religious. But some do. But I think that having Shelley have, you know, such a keen singer-songwriter approach to the experience of a woman who had been raised religious, who experiences the world through, you know, a lot of religious contexts, is really valuable and important both to hold up our own experiences to that and say, what do we find in common? What do we see similar in our experiences? And then to say, hey, atheists are a very, very diverse bunch because not everyone comes from a Christian background that then rejects God or was done wrong by the church. Not everyone was born into an atheistic family.
Right, right. If you haven't listen to her album, An Atheist Album, do that as soon as this show is over, because it has changed the way that I phrase my perspective when I'm talking to religious people. She's given a lot of insights, and she's just such a warm, genuine person, and it comes across in her music like nobody else I've known.
Yeah, I was introduced to her and started listening to her music shortly after I kind of admitted to myself that I was an atheist and started admitting that to others. And having that voice was so important for me to be able to hear that in someone else. Definitely go listen to her album. She's beautiful and lovely.
Yes.
And she's got a bunch of different kinds of LPs on lots of topics.
Yeah.
There's some really neat things about expectations of a woman in terms of what it means to be not the perfect ideal that is held up in media. And for someone who has such beauty just oozing from her pores mm-hmm. to be able to put voice to that, it really, you know, grounds us in, or grounds anyone in a perspective of there's things that you seem to be unappreciated for, and hitting back against that and feeling that within yourself, but then also saying like, I don't need to go, you know, to aspire to someone else's ideal of what I should be.
Absolutely. And her mix of folk and jazz and blues, there's something in there that you can aesthetically appreciate as well. She's just a really well-rounded musician, and yeah, I can't say enough good things.
Done some collaboration with our resident naturalist, Dan.
Yes.
As well.
I can't wait for that EP to be released. You have no idea.
So really focusing on the beauty and wonder of our own Puget Sound regional environment. Mm-hmm. So really wide ranging in topics of focus for Shelley Siegel, but she will be here next Sunday and we're super excited about
it.
As if you couldn't tell. We're all fangirling here.
So much.
Indeed. So meanwhile, other things that happened this week, it was coming out day this past week. National Coming Out Day. And yes. And I've seen, so I went to Smith College in the early 2000s, where a lot of young women, it's a women's college. It's still one of the seven sisters that is still single gender, single sex, officially. And it's a place where a lot of young women in the early 2000s, at least, were finding themselves in terms of how to present their sexuality or experience the world as a non-straight person. And so Coming Out Day when I was in college was a lot of like, we're here, we're queer, you know, get over it. But there's been a lot of changes in what Coming Out Day means and what it has meant to a lot of people. And it seems to be really wide ranging in what people do to come out. It just doesn't mean you're in a closet, everyone thinks you're straight, and then suddenly you're out of the closet and you're gay or you're lesbian, right? So I don't know. Have you guys noticed that change in what Coming Out Day can mean to individuals or what it seems to mean in just the social sphere?
Definitely. I mean, as we're learning more about the spectrum of sexuality, it's and gender and biological sex, the idea that there could only be gay or straight, or even just bi, there are a whole host of sexual orientations that people are discovering. I mean, to get a little personal, I came out to my parents yesterday, actually, sort of unanticipated, spontaneous. It was just like, oh yeah, I'm demisexual. You've never heard that term. Let me explain.
Can you explain? Yeah. Like, I'm pretty up on a lot of different things, but I'm not immersed in the Tumblrverse. Yeah. So tremendously, what is demisexual in that case?
It's gender or even biological sex doesn't really isn't really a huge factor in attraction for me. It's more of a mental stimulation, an emotional mental connection that anybody can have. I don't cis, het, you know, trans, whatever. That doesn't have an impact on whether or not I find you attractive. And that's generally what demisexual means.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. I think in terms of like coming out in the new social media arena, it's been really cool to see people that I know who haven't felt comfortable coming out in their personal lives doing it on social media and having validation from their friends and their peers that it's just the visibility, I think, is really important, having that outlet to be visible and to be seen. I also kind of came out again, I guess, this year. I've identified as bisexual for a very long time. But kind of like what Bridget was saying about all of this new information coming to light about gender being a spectrum, like, I don't think bisexual is the correct term for me anymore, and I identify more as pan or more as demisexual, where I don't care about any of it. As long as we have a connection, a bond, that's what I need. Genitalia, your visible appearance doesn't matter. It's more of a mind connection. So yeah, I'm actually in the same boat as you are.
So it's pretty neat. And I've actually heard a lot of folks that still use the term bi or bisexual, despite it suggesting that there's only two of anything to be attracted to.
Right. And you have, there's also a lot of people that are not in favor of using the word queer to describe themselves. Mm-hmm. And I do describe myself as
I do too. Yeah.
Queer. But a lot of people take offense at that because it was originally used as a slur.
Well, it wasn't originally used.
Right.
It was turned against the community and now it's been reclaimed. And it's sort of an umbrella term for all of those other things that aren't generally mainstream common knowledge terms like demisexual or pansexual, things like that, that maybe you don't want to explain it to the person you're talking to. Like, yeah. You're just like, I'm queer.
It's a nice, safe, general umbrella term if you don't want to get into arguments about bisexuality being real or including more than two genders or whatnot.
So pretty neat things. I'm particularly interested in this discussion about spectrum and about gender, especially because this week, and this is what I think we're really going to dig into, this week, the Boy Scouts of America Association sort of rocked, or Boy Scouts of America, BSA, rocked a lot of boats, and a lot of headlines were announcing suddenly that girls could be Boy Scouts, right? That the Boy Scouts are now accepting girls.
Heaven forbid.
Oh, no.
So you say heaven forbid, but it's not a tremendously strange thing to say because we know that the Boy Scouts have had a very, very cozy relationship with a lot of religious institutions, particularly the LDS Church. So that's the Mormon Church. And different geographic regions. I mean, my little brother was part of St. Julia's, which was the Catholic parish, mm-hmm. right? Our family was not Catholic, but that's where the Boy Scouts, met. That's where they rented space. And so, yeah, heaven forbid, right, that girls be allowed to be Boy Scouts. But you guys actually schooled me on this. Girls at this time are still not allowed to be Boy Scouts.
Just Cub Scouts.
Okay.
At this point.
And still in segregated packs by gender. So it's not going to be a co-ed packs.
So because something about building a Pinewood Derby racer, building a little car to race down something has to be gender segregated. Is there too much scandal that would happen if boys and girls built their little, pine box cars together?
I was having a conversation online with a friend of a friend about this, and it was like, well, some people don't like to do the cooking and the cleaning and stuff. They would rather do the Pine Derby boxes and the campouts and stuff like that. But apparently genitalia is important in that.
Yeah. So the cooking and cleaning, there's Boy Scout badges and cooking and cleaning.
No.
And those are going to be
Girl Scouts.
Okay.
Has that. But then, so if you have...
I don't know how long you've been, away from Girl Scouts, but there's some engineering badges and some amazing kind of mathematics things that happen in Girl Scouts, too.
There's still, a babysitting badge.
I think childcare is an important badge.
Right.
It's for boys, too, and the boys don't have the type of homemaking, for lack of a better word, badges and activities that the budget planning.
So there was budget planning badges in the Girl Scouts, but no homemaking, home economics.
Yes, it's not equitable between the men and the women's groups.
So then, should we be celebrating then that girls are allowed to be Cub Scouts? I mean, is this a Boy Scouts opening up their doors to be much more inclusive and getting on with the times?
No. That it's all about money. They've seen a decline in participation, and families complaining that they're like, well, okay, so I have my son in Boy Scouts and I have my girls in Girl Scouts, and therefore I have to be in three different places at once. Why can't we just all have them together? And so that's sort of the accommodation that they're making.
It's
basically just to appease, not to actually include.
Agreed.
So, So I'm not a particular fan of the Boy Scouts organization in general, and not just because for such a long time they barred, gay scouts or gay scout leaders, which we've gone into at length, the illogical nature of banning a gay scout, right? Because, what would happen if they're on a camp out and they're all sleeping in the same tent together? And that happens anyway. Anyone that's been to sleepaway camp, there's always preteens and teens are always exploring levels of physicality and boundaries and things like that. Regardless of whether they identify as gay or not. And when you set those good, bodily autonomy boundaries, in any organization, you're going to have safety of your kids. We've talked at length about the ban on, gay scout leaders being conflated with this idea that just because a man is gay, he's going to put children in danger. That absurd idea that comes from no basis in logic whatsoever. So a lot of people have been celebrating the Boy Scouts, for seemingly being more inclusive by allowing first gay scouts, then scout leaders, and by very recently, this year, saying that trans kids can be accepted into certain packs, and there's some level of, autonomy into the different regions and the different troops and the different packs. Some will say, yes, we're allowing, these types of kids and these types of leaders. Some will say, no, we still, hew to our traditional things, which I think is a big compromise. But there's one huge group of kids and leaders and potential excellent individuals and upstanding citizens that we're leaving out here, that the Boy Scouts of America is completely leaving out. And that's atheists.
Atheists.
Yep.
Because don't you know, atheists eat babies, so you can't have them near children, right?
Well, that's like the contrary to the babysitting first aid badge.
Yeah, that's why there's no babysitting badge in Boy Scouts.
So we said with some sarcastic abandon.
Sarcasm.
Very.
Yeah. Just in case that didn't come across. But that was sarcasm.
some of the things, Bridget, you and I have been really involved in Camp Quest, and Camp Quest, has been around for, more than 20 years at this point as that alternative to, typical scout camps that wouldn't allow gay individuals and wouldn't allow atheists. Within that 20-year period in time, we've actually seen moves by the Boy Scouts to become increasingly wedded to their commitment to religiosity, which is something that really gets under my skin. I mean, during the tenure of having done this show, Ask an Atheist, we've seen in 2015, there was a new rank advancement requirement where scouts had to tell how they'd done their duty to God. So part of that scout law is doing duty to God, right?
Yeah.
But in 2015, when they revised a whole bunch of other different, ways to advance your rank or earn your merits and badges and things like that, they actually said, well, you're going to have to stand before your troop leader and tell how you've actually fulfilled this particular part of scout law. And I'm looking on scouting.org and I was seeing, a lot of discussion about this. And for the scouts' perspective, they actually thought that this was a step forward because it would not make the scout leader judge the scout or the potential, graduate or advancement, kid. Because they said there's nothing about how they have to demonstrate to the, to the approval of the troop master. It's just the kid has to stand there and tell how they've done it. And so to the scout's perspective, right, to Boy Scouts of America, their perspective is this opens up anything for what the kid wants to say. But at the end of the day, you're still asking a child to say, how have you served God? Whether it's Allah, whether it's Jesus, whether it's Jehovah, whether it's Heavenly Father, whether it's Yahweh, whether it's Adonai, how have you served your God? And for any child, any potential scout who wants to advance, if they admit that they are atheist, despite saying, I have served my community and humanity in this particular way, they're denied such advancement.
Yeah, that... As a kid who was raised in that, I worked for an evangelical Christian theater company that did the exact same thing during auditions. And that is a really difficult thing to do, to ask a child to do, because a lot of times at that age, they're just going through the motions. They're doing what's expected. And then asking them to sort of like publicly out themselves about exactly what they've done, that's harmful. Again, still something I'm dealing with in my own life. And then they're calling this a positive step. And it's like, you're putting them on the spot. You're making them like do things that, you're making them declare things that are not necessarily something that maybe they thought about, you know?
Yeah, it's maybe something that they don't really understand that well because they're children.
They're children.
I mean, I would actually say, to be a little bit of devil's advocate, I would think that it's important for, you know, an aspiring, I don't know what you call someone who's aspiring to the next rank up in Scouts or in any particular leadership program, to articulate sort of why they think they should be able to advance to the next rank, to show their leadership, to show their service and things like that. I think that's a good thing to be able to do. And I think that's an okay thing to make kids a little bit uncomfortable, to put them on the spot, to say to an older adult, what are the things that, you know, you have done? Tell how you have done a particular service or duty. It's the God part that I've got a problem
right.
with.
Oh, well, and I completely agree with you on that. But there are certain things that kids do naturally that show their service that they could then analyze and be able to express in that in their daily life. You know, I helped my mom mow the lawn for my mom, or I did the laundry or whatever it is. But it's concrete. Asking an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old or 12-year-old to take that concrete activity that they do and also apply it to something that is not as tangible, that is something that is asking them to go a bit farther beyond than necessarily what a child should be expected to do.
Yeah, this subject matter, I think, is... Why did they add that in?
Well, I think that, you know, it comes down to Baden-Powell, who was the, you know, originator of some of the Scouts, that really stressed that one cannot be a good, moral, upright citizen without a belief in God. And it was at a time when I don't care what God you believe in, it's just got to be a God. And it's kind of funny that since then, right, you have a lot of people that look to the work of Mr. Baden-Powell to say, let's get back to the roots of what scouting was like, and regardless of whether you are religious or not, you know, incorporate and welcome you into that. We've got a few organizations actually that sort of provide that balance and provide that inclusivity for kids that don't believe in God. But let me just read to you beforehand what the Scouts say in terms of if a child, if that 12-year-old, because I actually do believe that it's okay to push kids into that abstract thinking, especially at age 8, at 10, at 12. I think that if we don't challenge them to have that abstract thinking, then they might not reach those conclusions. They might just go along with the motions. And but what it says here is a Scout's declaration that he does not believe in God, which we know 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds can and have all across, you know, the world actually declared, whether it's because they've thought about it, because they've been exposed to it, or because, man, the issue of God or the concept of God doesn't make any sense to me. But a Scout's declaration that he does not believe in God is grounds to deny rank advancement and could affect his continued membership in the troop. Then they go on to say the situation should be approached with the utmost caution, recognizing that the Scout and his family are best served by a process in which the Scout remains positively engaged in his troop, in his scouting pursuits, and troop leadership should not attempt to counsel the Scout, but should contact the boy's parents or guardians and allow the family time to discuss the situation with the youth. If the issue arises at a board review, the board should be adjourned and reconvene at a later date, giving the family an opportunity to conduct that discussion with their son. So this is all saying, okay, parents, go bully your child into believing in God, so they can keep making the Pinewood Derby cars.
Right. And that's, I think that's my one of my big problems with it, is that it's not challenging a child to analyze or think about abstract thoughts. It's you must have this declaration in place in order for it to advance. If you aren't able to articulate how you're feeling about this or what you're doing about this abstract concept, then you don't get to advance. And that's detrimental.
And likewise, if you are able to articulate your feelings on this concept, and if your feelings on this concept are, I don't really dig the whole God concept, you're out.
You're out.
Yeah.
Or beforehand, we want to keep you involved. But hey, parents, get your kid in line, because by signing your kid up for Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts or Weebelows or whatever, you know, you said that your kid is going to be a God believer. Mm-hmm. You said you're going to ensure that your kid is a God believer, because clearly someone who can tie knots, figure out how to survive in the woods, figure out how to provide service to the community, figure out how to get along in a communal situation, in a camping situation, in a leadership situation, in an intercultural situation, clearly can't be of value unless they are a God believer. That would be a big no, in our opinions here.
I mean, we see that at Camp Quest all the time. Those kids that are compassionate and wonderful human beings, and they don't believe in God, and they're capable of kayaking to the point and back, and they're capable of reaching the top of the rock wall, and they can hit the targets.
Wow, it's almost like they're humans, just like everybody else.
Wow.
So Camp Quest is wonderful for that summer program. If you're not sending your kid to a scouts camp in the middle of summer, Camp Quest is wonderful. But what happens during the rest of the year when you want that continuity, when you want that community? And I did tease, there are some inclusive organizations mm-hmm. that will be able to allow kids of all genders and backgrounds, including atheists. And I want to give a shout out actually to Campfire. I was a Campfire kid when I was very young. Started out as a girls' organization and then became a co-ed. And then has changed name from Campfire Girls to Campfire Kids to Campfire USA. And I think now they're just branded as Campfire. And they've been a very good friend to Camp Quest.
Yes, they have.
Because we rent space from Campfire in order to hold our camp.
Yes, we have developed a really good bond with our local Campfire chapter. They have been very good to us. We continue to be very good to them. And it's a very symbiotic relationship we have with them. And I love them.
So the Campfire Law, I actually find to be really lovely. And it's seek beauty, give service, and knowledge pursue. Be trustworthy ever in all that you do. Hold fast unto health and your work glorify, and you will be happy in the law of Campfire. So that glorify part might sit a little bit funny with folks that are used to hearing only glorify and glory be something in a religious context. But saying there's honor in service and work is how I would interpret it for a panoply of religious and non-religious perspectives in that case.
I mean, you can glorify a lot of things. And one of the signs that the campfire has up in the lodge at Camp Kirby, where we rent space for Camp Quest, they say glorify beauty a lot. And I that really resounds strongly with me, because that space is probably the most beautiful space I've ever seen. And so it's a matter of taking care of that space and keeping it beautiful and glorifying that beauty.
Yeah, that glorified beauty sounds lovely.
Yes.
We do live in one of the most beautiful areas in the world, in my opinion.
It really is. And that particular spot, for me, every time I go down that long, narrow driveway, it's like coming home. And I know that we won't always be able to rent space there. And, you know, I'll always be a little homesick for that. But it's the people that makes it. And I think that the campfire staff that we have had continuous over the last 6 years of Camp Quest Northwest, they've really become part of our Camp Quest family as well. And so, yeah, they've been really, really good to us. So I appreciate them a great deal.
So what about Girl Scouts? Because a lot of people bring up Girl Scouts saying, you know, OK, you could be someone of any religion and it's something to help empower young girls, helping them to see themselves in, you know, all kinds of myriad positions. Yes, you've got the babysitting and first aid. Yes, you've got sort of that home economics bent to it, but also amazing things having to do with engineering, Lego Mindstorms, you know, being leaders in global summits and things like that. Does that seem like a better option, you know, compared to the Boy Scouts?
Maybe for some girls it is.
No, you were a Girl Scout?
I was in Girl Scouts. I was in Girl Scouts. My mom was my troop leader when I was growing up. That's how I got to be in Girl Scouts. I have varied opinions on this that are very strong in two different directions. On one hand, I was a Girl Scout. I didn't get a lot out of it. It was floofy homemaking and crafts. And while I love crafts as an adult, as a child, I wanted something different than what I was getting out of it. And there was nothing else. And I think Girl Scouts is not a good alternative for it's not good for all girls.
So,
right.
Sometimes Girl Scouts will say, we know that girls thrive in single sex or single gender environments. And as someone who actually is a graduate of a women's college, I don't actually stand as a proponent of single sex education. For some individuals, I know that Smith College was exactly what they needed, and it provided a place for them to study and find themselves. For women who come from communities where women are not valued in terms of their studies, that was great. I didn't come from that kind of background or experience. And when looking at research of graduates of women's, of a single gender high school, so girls' high schools or women's colleges, the overall outcomes in terms of, you know, 10 years on, in terms of income, in terms of job placement, in terms of family success, doesn't seem to be vastly different from women who go to, non-single sex educational institutions. And so I wonder about the research that shows both of those kinds of things. And if we uphold quote, value of single sex and single gender environments for girls, are we merely postponing holding the general society accountable for being fully inclusive of girls and women? And that's one of the things that I wrestle with as someone who calls herself a feminist, a humanist, as a product of a single-sex education, as a former Girl Scout. I was a campfire kid for when we lived where there are campfire troops and circles. And then when we moved to a different place, I was part of my Girl Scout troop for, you know, 4 years. Until about, you know, eighth grade or so. So those are some of the things that I wrestle with. Did you ever have any religiosity introduced into your Girl Scouts?
Aside from holding our meetings in churches, no.
So one of the things, I never experienced any kind of religiosity in Girl Scouts. And we had actually the Scout House, which was a property that was owned by Girl Scouts. So we weren't renting space in churches. We weren't in, you know, middle school gyms or anything like that. It was the Scout House. But something that I wasn't aware of, now we've got this My Promise, My Faith pin. So you've got pins and badges. And in Girl Scouts, you've got one line from, you know, the Girl Scout law where you find something from your faith with the same ideas as the Girl Scout law. So on the surface, it seems really neat. When you look at something that's meant to be as universal as the Girl Scout law, you know, on my honor, I will try to serve God and my country and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. Find something that's similar within my faith. And when you have someone from, you know, a different faith be able to highlight a similarity, I can see that it's looking at bringing together many different backgrounds and saying, look, we are more similar than we are different. We are more alike in our goals than we are different. But where does that leave an atheist kid? You know, saying find something in the Girl Scout law that is similar to your faith. Well, atheists don't have a scripture. We don't have a doctrine. We don't have someone who makes rulings on atheist.
There's no like standard set of ideals other than I don't believe in a God.
And for myself personally, I struggle with the concept of faith just in general. I don't have that blind sort of trust in anything.
Yeah.
Everything that I believe in, there is concrete evidence. I tell people all the time, I'm like, I don't have faith. So when you're asking me to make some sort of tie to another person's faith, I'm like, I don't know.
So there's a really interesting opportunity for humanists and atheists out there, because part of girls earning the My Promise My Faith pin in Girl Scouts is to find a woman in your own or another faith community and ask her how she tries to use that particular line that you selected in from the Girl Scout law in her own life. So you've got this opportunity for atheists and humanists to say, hey, parts of the Girl Scout law might be used by other, you know, women in leadership or women that are successful in a variety of different communities. I wonder what a Girl Scout troop leader would say if a bunch of girls came back with, well, this is how the humanist and atheist women apply this particular thing in their life. Can you earn your faith pin in that
respect? Okay, Girl Scouts, you've got a challenge now. If you're listening,
call us,
let us know, because I would love to do that.
We'll talk to you up down till, you know, next Tuesday, all about how the Girl Scout law applies or doesn't apply mm-hmm. within our particular life.
The
other thing that some people say is the value of Boy Scouts overrides whether you can really be included as an atheist or not, because the skills that you learn and the credit and the credibility that you earn going through the Boy Scouts is tremendous. If you say you're an Eagle Scout, you are an Eagle Scout for life. You know, you have that rank. You've achieved that rank. And, you know, I mean, is there something like that in the Girl Scouts? Is there something like that in Campfire that has that name recognition? I mean,
Girl Scouts kind of does. It's like a yes and no. They have the gold award, but it's not a rank. It's an award, so it's not really something that you can carry with you forever. And it doesn't carry the prestige that the name Eagle Scout does.
So, Bridget, if you were to get a resume from someone, you know, and evaluate whether they were a good fit to work on your particular team and it had on the resume gold award, would that have any meaning for you?
None whatsoever.
If someone were to have the thing Eagle Scout written on their particular resume, would that have some kind of meaning for you? Would that give you an idea of what this person may have achieved?
Yes, but from my perspective, all of the Eagle Scouts I've known were stoners, so not necessarily in a positive light.
Actually, now that I think about it, the Eagle Scouts I know are stoners.
This might be a geographic peculiarity, though.
We are in the Pacific Northwest.
We are. Yeah, so. But I mean, this was even before it was legalized, like in Washington State, when I was a high schooler. And my friends, my male friends, were being given this rank of Eagle Scout. I think all but one of them was like already massively into that stoner culture.
Well, it could also be because if you're approaching the rank of Eagle Scout, you have to be tremendously involved. And maybe it would leave very little time for other kind of social subcultures, yes, like to be in athletics. So, yes, and there might be some
maybe
carryover there.
Yeah, maybe.
That makes a lot of sense.
So I do want to give one shout out to another organization that seems to be really quite inclusive. It's fairly new. It was only founded in 2003. And if you look back in our archives at askanatheist.tv to an episode that Sam and I did while in St. Louis, the Ethical Society of St. Louis has actually a chapter of the Navigators, and they named theirs Ethical Navigators because it's associated with the Ethical Society, which is a congregational format for non-religious individuals. And the Navigators USA is actually really cool. Had you guys heard of this at all before, you know,
not
today?
Not before today, no.
So this is the moral compass. It's not the promise. It's not the oath. It's the Navigator's moral compass, which right off the bat tells me, hey, you know what? This is something that's just supposed to guide us. It also has that nice little phrasing with navigator and compass and, you know, what your directions are. Yeah. But it's not something that you have to swear to. It's not something that you are taking as granted and unchanging. But the Navigator Moral Compass says, as a navigator, I promise to do my best to create a world free of prejudice and ignorance, to treat people of every race, creed, lifestyle, and ability with dignity and respect, to strengthen my body and improve my mind to reach my full potential, and to protect our planet and preserve our freedom.
That is beautiful.
That's wonderful.
To me, and to have a welcoming community that's throughout the entirety of the year that focuses on those scouting and navigating skills, that creates leaders amongst kids, and that welcomes kids of any gender, of any creed, of any background to aspire to those particular things. That's where I, as an atheist and as a humanist, that's the kind of organization that I would love to see be something flourishing.
I absolutely agree. And one of the things that really stands out to me is that phrase, to create a world free of prejudice and ignorance. We as a society in the United States, have really glorified this state of ignorance in our media and in our certain schools and things like that. To be able to fight against that is just, it gave me chills. I love it.
I think that it's really cool. I hope that the Ethical Navigators in St. Louis are still going. And I would love to see some here on the West Coast. More campfire, more navigators. If Girl Scouts works for you and you can make it work as a humanist or an atheist, awesome. If Boy Scouts works for you, maybe think about trying to work the organization from within and say, hey, can we be more open and inclusive? Because you don't need a faith in God and a duty to God to be a whole, well-rounded, just citizen. That's stuff to think about as we celebrate the quote unquote, introduction of girls into Cub Scouts. Let's look at getting things fully inclusive. This is Ask an Atheist, 844 Skeptic. Thank you, Meredith and Bridget, for this nuanced discussion of what we can do to help our young people become leaders.
You are listening to KTAH LP 101.9 FM, Radio Tacoma. If you'd like to help us out or learn more, go to radiotacoma.org. Specifically, if you're hearing this, we'd love to hear where you are and how you found this.
Okay, can you say Radio Tacoma?
Radio Tacoma.
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 KTAHLP 101.9 FM.
Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist. We've got Wes back in the studio now. How are you doing?
Lovely, thank you.
And I think after a full near half hour talking about all those different opportunities for girls here and there, let's go to a story to Indiana about one little girl who, in her religious environment, was maybe denied some things that we atheists might object to. Parochial school officials in Indiana have denied a 9-year-old girl the opportunity to participate in her first communion ceremony with peers because of her affinity for wearing tailored suits. Katie Mansell attended St. John the Evangelist School in St. John, Indiana. Katie sports short hair and enjoys wearing bow ties, suspenders, and even crushed velvet suits. Her mother, Chris, a former nun, reported that a St. John's priest told her she's raising her daughter wrong for not making Katie dress in a feminine way and offered the family a choice. Katie could wear a dress to the ceremony and participate with her classmates or have a separate ceremony if she wore a white suit. Katie's parents removed her and her sister from St. John's and enrolled them with a different parish. What do you guys make of this?
Oh, wow. I haven't heard separate but equal in like a year.
Were we not just talking about separate but equal a few weeks back?
Weren't we just talking about that when in regards to scouting?
Yes. Yeah. So, obviously we're not fans of the Catholic Church because, well, we're not Catholics. We're all atheists here. But it's kind of interesting to see, even within the Catholic Church, something as momentous as the First Communion saying, you know what, we don't want a kid to participate. Catholic Church has declining numbers just as much as the Boy Scouts do. Mm-hmm. So have you guys seen Katie's awesome white suit?
Oh, she rocks that so hard.
She is a fierce little one. She's got that faux hawk going on.
Love it. The whole aesthetic is just perfect.
And, you know, when you look into the case a little bit more, Katie's mom has, you know, said, hey, you know what? She participated in another ceremony that was important. It's called Reconciliation. And Katie participated in that wearing a little cardigan and some black slacks. And nobody complained about that. And the dress code supposedly for that ceremony is supposed to be girls in, you know, in dresses and things like that. does it matter whether a girl for a particular holy ceremony, when the family just wants her to participate in, you know, deepening her Catholic faith, does it matter what clothes are on the outside?
Styles change over time anyways. I mean, who are we to say whatever? I mean, clothes are clothes. It shouldn't matter. And the mother was a formerly a nun anyways, right? Then she had felt a calling to be a mother?
Yeah. So I'm wondering whether there's already some skepticism by the church leadership in that case, looking at this woman who has already pushed envelopes in certain ways. You know, it's not unheard of in Catholic history that nuns then leave their callings for something different. But I don't know, or I don't imagine that they're held in super high regard by people who chose to stay within those particular clerical positions.
Yeah. But in regards to the clothing choice, though, I mean, I remember seeing pictures of my mother's first communion and the dress, and I was like, you were a child wearing a wedding dress? Like, that was essentially what it looked like, that white flowing lacy dress that you might have worn in a wedding. And that's creepier to me than any suit or tie or anything else.
So that's a little unnerving for you if you're participating in a ceremony at age 9, you know, and we were just talking, do you have the capacity to make that commitment necessarily, or figure out how you are, or articulate how you are feeling about this concept of God, but yet we're making you, you know, be in this wedding-like dress, we're pigeonholing you into this gender role, we're shaming your parents if they don't raise you in a way to make you look feminine, ready to receive communion in your wedding-like dress?
Exactly.
Well, isn't that kind of the purpose of communion anyways, is to dedicate yourself to God, to Jesus, kind of marry him anyways, taking him? That's the whole thing about communion, is like the wafer and the wine for the first time, isn't it?
Yes, that's that Holy Communion. You take the wafer, and yeah, you're saying I am one that's communing, right? You're coming together, right? Together is that communion word.
It feels icky to think about that in the context of little children.
Of children, yeah. I mean, I don't like the sexualization of children in general, and that whole marriage thing concept to it is just, it's just creepy to me.
Yeah.
Can't handle it.
So on one hand, we're wanting to support Katie and her mom and her family and saying, wear what you want, girl. It's awesome. You look like really seriously awesome.
Seriously great.
Dapper.
Yeah. She's got this little bespoke white suit, right?
and
wearing a 3-piece suit.
Right. And the suit actually sort of takes away from the whole wedding aspect of it. Like, you can wear a white suit at any time.
See, that's funny that you say that, because I got a friend who got married in a suit to her wife. Oh. That looks just like that.
You know, and I mean, that's fine, but it's not the typical mainstream view of a wedding ceremony. So like when you take that aspect of the white dress away from it, it's less creepy for me.
I think what it really shows is that when you have, you know, even when you have religious people who are very dedicated to their faith, you're still going to have people that don't conform to societal expectations within that particular religious societal expectation, within those cultural norms. And you're going to have people that are pushing the envelope the whole way. And I'm interested to see where Katie goes after this. I mean, the articles that have been written about her have been very careful to say, you know, well, is this a gay kid or is this a trans kid or a gender nonconforming kid? And mom says she doesn't even use words like gender nonconforming. She just is who she is. She wants to wear a suit. She feels that skirts, you know, she doesn't like how skirts feel on her body. And this is what she likes. And she's interested in fashion. You know, why bother bringing any of the terms into it when she's still discovering who she is as a 9-year-old?
Exactly. Why are these people sexualizing this young child anyways?
Exactly.
So from one Catholic church to another Catholic church, the International Human Rights Art Festival that was scheduled to take place today at a New York Catholic church has moved locations rather than pull two anticipated performances that diocese leaders, including Archbishop Timothy Dolan, objected to. The two pieces in question included an improv comedy performance called Thank You for Coming Out and an original cabaret set by trans artist and activist Maybe Burke. The event was supposed to have taken place at the church under the auspices of The Culture Project, a nonprofit that rents part of the church basement for performance space. With less than 2 days to go before the event, organizers scrambled to secure St. Anne and the Holy Trinity, an Episcopal church in Brooklyn Heights, as an alternate venue. So, Catholic Church, I can't imagine why you're needing to rent out your disused space to, you know, pick up some extra cash here and there. It's not like your coffers have been drained in large payouts to people that have been wronged by your organization and your institution.
Not at all. I mean, clearly that money is not being used to, like, actually help people. but, yeah, sure, it's the church's space. They can do what they want with it. They can make up whatever rules or regulations, but waiting until sort of the last minute to tell them, no, this isn't going to work, that's sort of awful.
Oh, I relate to this a little bit because 5 years ago when we wanted to host Shelley Siegel, right, we were already and booked not in a church basement, but through a place of public accommodation right here in Tacoma. And 6 days or 5 days before the event said, oh, wait, we just found out that your organization, right, Ask an Atheist as a radio show, which we were upfront about from the very beginning, and your performer, who has a concept album called An Atheist Album, doesn't quite mesh with our values, and so we're not going to be able to host you here. And having experienced that and scrambling, just days before an event is supposed to happen is difficult enough as an event organizer. But to have it be because of of the host organization's religious orientation and the content of what you are presenting in a way that maybe challenges society and expectations, but is a community interaction. It's something that brings thought to how we go about our daily lives, and to do that in terms of art. What do you think you're getting into when you're agreeing to host art and artists and performances? Performance is all about pushing the envelope,
especially cultural art. Like, it's not saying this is accommodating your culture. This is a broad spectrum of culture. Therefore, there are things that you may not agree with, but you agreed to host it anyways, and then turned around a few weeks later and said no. Like,
This is coming from, in part at least, from Timothy Dolan, cardinal, right?
He's an archbishop.
Archbishop, sorry. Who has been involved, embroiled, you could say, in the sexual abuse scandals that have happened all over the U.S. for, well, decades, century, probably, really.
Which Catholic archbishop isn't involved?
But him in particular. Yeah. I mean, he's been involved in cover-ups, as I recall, anyways.
He's
not a nice person.
I can't quite confirm or deny that because I don't have that particular background knowledge on Dolan. My interactions come from being in the Boston area and the Boston Archdiocese, which was, you know, very much a painful and difficult experience for the whole community, regardless of whether you're involved with the Catholic Church or not. This did come from the higher ups. The individuals who are associated with that particular parish were very supportive of cultural arts happening at their church. I mean, you got to hand it to someone when they say, hey, yeah, bring people to explore these cultural ideas and these performance, events. They're getting their foot inside the church somehow, and maybe one or two of them will stick around. That's someone who's taking a much broader look at it, but unfortunately, or fortunately, perhaps on how you look at it, is overruled by the higher ups.
Which is honestly too bad. So, sometimes, like in this case, the local church thought that this would be a good thing to host. And yeah, I mean, that's great for community building. That's great for them, honestly, for the Catholic Church, because maybe, yeah, like you said, a couple will stick around. But
it's a great use of space. I mean, we know that these churches and these are grand edifices in a lot of ways, and to be able to make use of them for community building is amazing. Because hey, if they're not going to be used for prayer, right?
Yeah.
Have a beautiful space that is then used for a wider spectrum of voices. But speaking of getting overruled by your higher ups, let's dig out from the recesses of 2016, someone who was overruled by some higher ups, Kim Davis, our friend from Kentucky.
Oh, boy.
You guys know that she's apparently still striving for relevancy at this point?
Just go away quietly, honestly.
So the county clerk from Kentucky who broke the law and went to jail for refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples is now fighting against marriage equality in Romania. The Liberty Council and the Romanian Coalition for Family arranged for Kim Davis to visit the Eastern European nation. Romania only just decriminalized homosexuality 16 years ago, and while the Romanian constitution uses gender-neutral language when referring to marriage, civil law restricts marriage to a man and a woman. Conservatives in the mostly Orthodox Christian nation are pushing to amend the constitution to reflect civil law.
Oh, goodness. Don't go away mad, Kim Davis. Just go away.
I don't know if she's going away mad, but this really striving for relevancy somewhere. Both Kim Davis and the Liberty Council, right? This legal advocacy group and cultural advocacy group, Liberty Council, highly conservative, highly religious, wanting to, support people that want to make their religious views become policy and become law of land, can't find footing in the United States anymore.
Nope.
Well, Liberty Council is famous for basically going around crying their salty tears to people, getting people to donate, and then using a bunch of lawyers to lose cases, usually. Kind of like our friend Joe Kennedy, who is also a friend of the Liberty Council, who they back, monetarily back, an attorney back him on his cases for trying to pray at the 50-yard line with the football team up in Bremerton, Washington.
So he's actually supported by the Liberty Council.
Yeah.
And is his case even going anywhere? Does he still have a case at this point?
Well, I mean, he lost his the most recent case, about 3 weeks ago, a month ago or so, where three panel judges said basically, no, you have no case, and he's pushing it further now.
So wanting to get your job back as an assistant football coach after your school district rightfully tells you, no, you're not allowed to on school property, right? During a school function, when all the kids are there, pray on the 50-yard line?
The 50-yard line. Goodness.
Does he take a knee when he's praying?
Actually, he did.
Is that the only acceptable time that you're allowed to take a knee? I don't know. But Kim Davis, right? That's the only place she's trying to find footing is Romania. Right. And Romania's kind of, it's a country, right? Mm-hmm. And you've got its own, quabbles and quibbles and fights over there about, trying to then become even more fighting against the times and saying, even though the Constitution says marriage is between spouses, right? That's that gender neutral language.
Nice.
Saying, hey, let's enshrine it in our Constitution to make an amendment. It didn't work here. I hope that Romania is not going to work where you are. You've got about a sixth or a seventh of your country that tried to sign a petition to make marriage between one man and one woman. That's not hugely robust numbers. And if you're mainly an Orthodox Christian nation and you still can't get your Orthodox Christian fellow residents and citizens to advocate for this, you might be flailing.
Yeah, just
if,
a little.
If you have to get a failed, jailed Kentucky clerk, a small town Kentucky clerk, to promote your agenda in your country, you might not be on strong grounds.
How is she even a thing still at all, let alone halfway across the globe?
Oh, well, like, there were people halfway across the globe that says, don't even bring her here. She's been jailed in her country.
Right.
We're not going to hold her up as a pinnacle of justice and truth because, you know, no, she's someone who went against the laws of her land.
Yeah.
Even the people within Romania that are trying to change their constitution and laws, you know, there's even people there that are saying, don't bring her there. Don't make her the face of our fight.
No, goodness.
I'm also sad that she's sort of representing the United States at this point in that country. And I'm like, no, not one of us.
Well, be a nicer to have many different representers or representatives at anywhere other than Kim Davis. This has been Ask an Atheist. Thank you to Wes and Meredith and Bridget for joining us today. See us next week at the Swiss with Shelley Siegel and Rob and maybe a few other secret guests here and there. Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. Tweet us at askanatheistwa. See you guys next week.